Hi everyone, bienvenida and welcome to the Las Musas podcast. My name is Aisha Perez Prado and I'm the author of City Feed and Our World Argentina. Today, I'm joined by Johnny Garza Villa and Elle Gonzalez Rose. And on this episode of Las Musas podcast, special topics edition, we'll be talking about love, romance, and friendship. We are all about the heart this month, and I love it. Johnny and Elle, can you start us off by introducing yourselves and telling us a little bit about your books? Johnny?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. My name is Johnny Garza Villa. I am an author of contemporary young adult novels, including my debut book, 1500 Miles from the Sun. My second book, Andre and Santi Were Here, and my upcoming third YA, Canto Contigo, which is in part a grief book, but also in part a rivals to lovers story, all about the highs and lows of high school mariachi.
Wow, that sounds exciting. And what about you, Elle? Tell us something about yourself and your book.
Hello, my name is Elle Gonzalez Rose. I'm the author of Caught in a Bad Fomance, which just came out in December. It's a queer YA rom-com from Joy Revolution, which is all about the sons of two rival families who have to fake date each other for a mutually beneficial dating scheme and involves taking down their families and lots of hijinks and romance. I'm also the author of 10 Things I Hate About Prom, which is another Latina rom-com that's coming out on May 14th of this year, also from Joy Revolution. Instead of rivals to lovers, it's friends to lovers instead, about a girl who decides to sabotage her best friend's promposals for the most popular girl in school who she cannot stand because she realizes she's in love with him. I have two more books that are coming out in the future: The Girl You Know, which is a thriller coming out from Bloomsbury in winter of 2025, and I just announced my next queer way rom-com, which is called Marisol Acts the Part, which I've been pitching as just Legally Blonde, but what if Elle wound up with a girl at the end.
Wow, you guys, your books, the way you describe them, I can so picture them like as movies. I'm like picturing in my mind seeing these characters and all their hijinks and stuff that they get up to.
We're so manifesting.
Exciting. Yeah. Okay, yeah, let's put that out there. I want to see that screenplay.
We clearly are good at doing the, like, it has a good one-line pitch, like highs and lows of mariachi, you're done. Legally Blonde but Gay, done. Like, it's perfect.
Yeah, I'm for it. I will be the first to buy a ticket to that. So let's dive right into the month of love and talk about the inspiration behind your love and friendship stories. Do you guys have any personal stories or influences that sneak into your writing when you least expect it? What can we see of you in your writing? How about starting with you, Elle?
Yeah, I think it's funny because people always say, like, are there love interests based on anyone you know? And I'm like, no, they're just perfect little people. It's like I think I take elements of the people that I love in my life, like various different elements of people that I like, that kind of just is what I connect to them with. Like, they're great listeners, or they're really great chefs, or like the way that they show love and respect and things like that. But I think where I took more inspiration from is actually the friendship side of things. Not so much friendship, it's friendship, but in my debut, there's a sibling relationship there that's really important. And in general, family is a big theme throughout multiple of my books. I'm pretty much all four of them so far. But I did not grow up with siblings, but I have a whole bunch of cousins and we're all a couple months apart. So we're like the exact same age. There's three, like per generation, there are three cousins all a few months apart in age. And we act like siblings. We would see each other every single day. We would all go to my abuela's house every day in the summer. So we just like would act like siblings, like bicker like siblings and love like siblings. And that really inspired, for me, the relationship of the siblings growing up, where it's like, you fight with this person all the time, but they really are your best friend. And that was kind of where I took this inspiration from, because also my family and I are very competitive. So that was a big thing, because in my debut, there's this big competition that's going on. And when I was writing the book, I was just imagining, what would it be like if my family ever did something like this, like went to a lake and competed in some kind of competition, or how many enemies would we make because we are so competitive? How many fights would we get into? So I'd say my family really had the biggest influence on
Yeah,
me.
and first of all, I think we wouldn't even get to the lake before there would be like an
Oh
all-out
no.
fight in my family. But
Like it would take like 6 hours to get to the lake. Like, because this has happened. We have gone on family trips. Like when you go on the plane, nobody's there on time. You're all fighting on the plane. Then you fight on the in like the airport. So
We have a lot of interest. I think we'd be hard pressed to find Latine stories that don't have a lot of family in them. You know, it's so pervasive in the culture. I think family is such an important part for so many of us. And sibling love, I like that spin on love, because sibling love, siblings, they say, are the longest relationship of our lives. And cousin siblings, primos hermanos, as we say in Spanish, you know.
exactly.
How about you, Jenny? Any personal stories that you can share?
I think probably similar to Elle, like maybe more closely with the, like, platonic relationships for sure than romantic. I would definitely say that, like, my friend group that I have made, like, since graduating high school and moving to San Antonio for college, and like in this sort of life and meeting these people, you know, throughout university and thing, and who I have a kind of accrued into my circle, have fully like shown up, at least like vibe wise or just energy wise. You know, these are the people who have been a source of inspiration and have allowed me to embrace all the parts of myself when I was like coming out and figuring myself out. And this is like the people that like I talk to just so familiarly, and we're like dragging each other all the time, like a like fully brown BIPOC circle of queer people and like some straights there just for flavor, I guess. It's like all, you know, it's so chaotic. And like I think in that, like, it really just shows in like my first book, with the sort of found family friendships you have in there. They're definitely defined by like the group of friends that I have now, that I think like I like how would my life have been if I had friends like these whenever I was 16, 17, 18. And I really like wanted to instill that into a main character and allow them to like figure out how to let themselves flourish while being surrounded by people who are fully supportive of that. And then just, you know, whenever it comes to like Andre's best friend, and Andre and Santi were here, and they're just so like always dunking on each other every single minute that they get. Even in like Canto Contigo, like my main character Rafi is such a like the Leo of all Leos, and so like fully needs friends to be able to put him in his place sometimes. You know, and so I love like getting those sort of fun relationships of just like, yeah, these people like are just wild all the time with each other, and like I just think it's so much fun to write about. But I feel like conversely with like romantic relationships, there's always more intentionality, I think, when it comes to writing the romantic relationships for me. That doesn't necessarily aim to make room for those sort of personal influences, like at least as it pertains to writing young adult books. I can like be more vibey and like more figure it out along e with learning who a character is when it comes to their friends. Like I feel like I can take my time better. Whereas with a love interest, I need to kind of be able to know exactly who they are, who I hope they're going to be from the get-go. So yeah, so like I don't necessarily think that like I've allowed myself to even just like have a sort of like these little personal traits or memories or anything get into love interests. But I do get those questions a lot, like out of like, is this based off of someone? Or like I even got the question of like, are like all of your love interests in these books like the kind of people that you look for in your own life? And it's like, no, probably not. But like they're perfect for these characters, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's so interesting to think about, because with me, as having really only written mostly picture books, I don't get to explore this romance and love as much. At least when you try in picture books, it's kind of frowned upon, unfortunately. Although I think a child can easily fall in love. I certainly fell in love when I was a child, and I think that many children fall in love. So I think they're very relatable love stories. But I kind of feel like, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of feel like most of my characters are kind of me. Like, I think I am like every character I write, like some aspect of me or who I wish I was or who I am deep inside or something, you know? So I don't really have to look very far away from the mirror to find characters because I guess there's a lot of me in there. So let's talk about characters a little bit more. When you're creating characters, when you're writing for young people, how do you make sure they're relatable to your readers? Because, you know, as we're all getting older every day, but we're writing for a certain segment of the population that's, you know, not getting older with us necessarily. So what about you, Johnny? How do you make sure they're relatable?
Yeah, so I think like one thing that playing Dungeons and Dragons has taught me is that, like, especially in times when I've gotten to play a character that is like 17, 18, 19 years old, is that there are fully like universal, timeless, across genre experiences. Like the pains of growing up, of crushes, of friendships, of family and expectations, these exist whether you're like a bard son of a noble, or you're a Chicana teenager living on the west side of San Antonio. And I think that, like, bringing in that understanding as a contemporary writer and being able to empathize with what that looks like today, specifically, and how a young person alive in 2024 creates unique experiences within these same sort of like universal canon events. I think that's really helpful for me to be able to make it relatable, of just like realizing how like things always are going to stay the same just because like the human experience sometimes like has that, but like it is going to be unique person to person. And I think being able to carry both of these things, especially writing like as someone who writes just like fully queer characters living in Texas, I want to make sure that they all sort of have different voices and communicate in their own specific ways and see the world in specific ways, even if they're going through similar things. Like, in what ways are they seeing this differently and experiencing these differently and growing differently? But I also think it's very important for me to know, and I think white writers in general to know that, like, one, we're never going to sound like teenagers. Like, as hard as we try, that's just not going to be a thing that we can accomplish. And I think being able to embrace that while also having respect for your audience and knowing that first and foremost, like, I am writing for teenagers, and like I can write for them without having to be like, hey, fellow youngsters. I think having that really just sets myself up for success of like, you know, I'm gonna try my best and I'm doing it for them, and I'm not doing it in a way in which like I want it to be preachy or I want it to like feel separate from their experiences. I want them to be able to feel at home and feel heart and just do that to the best of my abilities.
Yeah. That I think what you said is so true about like not trying maybe to sound just like they do, because we really that's like a dead giveaway. I think that
You're
no.
gonna fail for sure. And
Yeah.
that's
How about
okay.
you, Al?
Yeah, I definitely have to avoid that. How do you do, fellow kids? Like that's not the goal. But I think I'm gonna echo a lot of what Johnny said, because they hit the nail on the head there. Because it's true that I think the biggest thing is to remember that we were all teenagers too, redacted years ago, you know? And I think that truly no experience is unique. Like my life is my life, and that's unique to me. But telling my story, even if I tell it like beat for beat for beat, is going to feel relatable to somebody out there. Like someone else is going to be like, yes, you know, I also was in the drama club of my high school, pining for this girl, making Glee fan edits because I wanted her to like me. You know, like nothing is truly, even no matter how you tell the story, there's always going to be like a nugget there that people are going to see themselves in. It's the reason we can see ourselves in characters that are in fantasy books and things like that, or in D&D. Like that's, it's this kind of thread that ties us all together. But I think that what time, like what, sorry, I'll start over. What I think my favorite part of writing YA is that I always say that I can write letters to my younger self and to the experiences that I had when I was a teenager that, you know, I would have loved to have seen. What do I look like 5 years down the road after I have dealt with this very intense thing that I dealt with? Like, whether that be grief or coming to terms with who you are, losing friends, and things like that. So, a lot of what I like to write about is the stuff that I went through when I was a teenager, because I know that these are all things that people have dealt with, whether it be, you know, figuring out what you want to do with your future, coming to terms with who you are, you're losing friends, you don't know what it is that you want to study, because these are all things that I know at least one teenager went through. So surely they're out there. But I think the hardest part is making sure that you are keeping up with the times, because, you know, I was not a teenager super recently, and the times have changed to some degree. So always making sure that what you're writing is feeling relevant to today's culture, I think, is very important. But the themes themselves never really change. So I think that makes the relatability a little bit easier in this day and age.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And like being the mom of teenagers, and I've had teenagers in my home for over 20 years now because my kids are so spread out. We're having like 26 years in a row of teenagers, which is fun. It's so true that they experience life with so much intensity. I think of emotion. You know, love is really love, and pain is serious pain. And maybe we, as we get older, we're able to like, maybe we numb ourselves a little bit more. I don't know. But when it's fresh, your first love or your first heartbreak, that's intense. And I'm so glad that we have YA authors like you guys to get help them, my kids and all kids, see themselves and see read about experiences that they're feeling in books. So let's talk a little bit more about being a Latina author, a Latinx author, and how that aspect of yourself influences your tales of love and romance. Are there any like special secretos that you have for aspiring Latina authors or any authors of YA love, romance, and friendship stories? L.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I find comes into play is that family is so huge in all of my books. Like, I write a lot of romance, and I also, even in my thrillers, like, there's always like the one kind of prime element, which is usually romance. And then there's always some other thing that's going on, and it's usually family, because I think that that's something that's not necessarily unique to Latina people, but I know that it's very special to me, is that I have a very, very big family that I'm very, very close to. And I was very involved, like, we were all involved in everybody's lives. Like, we have my cousins and things like that. So my family was such a huge part of my life. It feels impossible to write a story that's a coming of age and not have the family be very central to the story, to me, at least. And that's something that's always been very important to me across all of my books. But something that I think is very special about writing Latinx culture is that a lot of the love interests in my books, with the exception of one, are not Latinx. They are some other culture. Is the idea of the exchanging of cultures, which is great, because then I get to talk more about the food in our culture specifically in my debut. But the love interest in my debut is mixed white, Korean, and Cuban. And the love interest is Puerto Rican, like me. And they get to talk and exchange more about the food of their respective cultures. And that's kind of how they show their love for one another, is by appreciating the recipes and background of each other's respective cultures. And I think there's something so romantic about that. Like, something about, like, taking the time to really learn about someone's culture, one, like, whether that be through learning someone's language, like someone learning Spanish to speak to your family, or like just learning about, like, you know, I used to eat arroz con gandule for every single holiday, and like someone making arroz con gandule is like such a beautiful and romantic thing, when it's like not a dish for you. Like, you went out of your way to make this very special dish to me and understand its significance in my life. So I think that that's a very, very cool kind of way that we can infuse our culture and, to me, show the ultimate romantic gesture.
Absolutely. Love through the stomach. I think it's well known that
The best love.
food is a way of showing love. Yeah. How about you, Johnny? Any secretos you
Yeah,
can reach?
I think what I really carry with me a lot, and that I'm like reminded of maybe a little bit more constantly than I think I even thought I would be when I was starting to write and like getting to put out books, is that like for many readers, the first time that they might ever come across a queer Chicana kid falling in love could be in one of my books. And the first time that they see one falling in love with another BIPOC kid, or they see two queer Chicanas falling in love in a story that is also so much about our culture and our community and our friendships and families, that like it could be in one of my books. And I feel like that's such a, I don't like to use the word important, but like it feels so important, like, and so like honoring. And it just makes me really want these stories and the love that I get to write about between these characters to really mean something, and to show them examples of young people who look and sound and love like them getting to also be loved back. And like, I think that's just kind of like what I always really think about as I'm writing. It's just that, like, who is going to be the teenager that reads this book and like sees themselves being a main character for the first time, falling in love for the first time, being loved back, and like finding all of those sort of, and discovering all those sort of like healthy romantic things that come with like growing up and figuring yourself out. So yeah, I really like, I like being able to remind myself of that like, you know, this writing, especially I think like YA literature, at least for me, I feel like there's a whole conversation one could have on like writing relationships and love and what it is to be a YA writer writing romance. But like, at least for me, I think that like it's really important that I not only show like these characters falling in love, but just really at the end of the day, like models of what it is to be loved, and like hoping that that then shows the reader like their own self-value and their own worth, and their own ability to like be loved and show love back.
Yeah, that sounds like really important to me, thinking about your readers and being able to seeing themselves and getting to be loved back. I think it's so important. Unfortunately, my stories are all unrequited love. You know, like I don't know why I'm my poor characters, nobody ever loves them. I have to, maybe that's why they're not getting picked up, Johnny.
That's
Now I'm
also another
thinking,
canon event. Like, that's also a huge another canon event that I think should be written about more for YA,
Yeah.
especially. Like, we should get more unrequited love of like that ends with this character figuring out love for themselves. And like, you know what? I don't need a man today. Talk to me tomorrow, but for today, like, it's fine. I'm good.
Yeah,
I think
I
we
think
need
it's
more of
tricky
that.
though, especially if you write for younger audience, like the picture book audience, like they don't like a sad ending. And for some reason that's my natural state. I don't know why. Need to work on that. But I absolutely think that all of the different possibilities of love need to be, explored through literature as they are in life. But let's talk about like any kind of tricky situations. I can imagine when you're writing love and romance and trying to relate to a YA audience, are there sort of any tricky situations with love scenes or other kinds of scenes that have sort of been a little bit difficult for you to write or that you had to think about a lot how you were going to portray? Let's start with L.
I think for me, I get to avoid the idea of like, oh, like, is this going to end up too spicy? Because I never let the characters get together until like 10 pages to the end. So I'm like, it would be a lot for them to get all that in like 10 pages before this book ends. But I mean, I have not personally dealt with it on like the romantic side because I always keep in mind like when I'm writing the romance that it is a romance for teenagers. And to me, that includes like all different kinds of experiences, like so long as it's keeping in mind that the intention is for it to be read by a teenager, but regardless of what the content is, I haven't had any issues. But I think that actually, weirdly, where I deal with kind of more challenges, I think is more on the friendship side because I think that our culture plays such a large role in like friendships and family. And like also for me in some of my books, like the intersection of queerness and Latinidad, like things like that is where I deal with more issues because I can't rely on people who are not from our cultural background to understand the importance of certain things to us. Like, and it varies from person to person. No one is a monolith, but like a lot of Latina people have different priorities, is all that I'll say. And so that has always been something that I think about a lot. And like when I decided to write Queer Latina Joy, I was like, this is very revolutionary for me specifically, because this was something that I did not think was possible for a very long time. And I didn't quite know how to communicate that. And like there was a very clear reason why I chose not to have any like contention or strife regarding the characters' sexualities in the book, to show that it's allowed to happen both to myself and to my readers. But also stories that I have not told yet, because I don't think that they would go over very well, about, you know, when you are Latina and you choose to put your family first for a lot of reasons, and how that intersects with all of the various relationships in your life, and how that intersects with your identity and things like that. So I think it's more, that's what I deal with a little bit more, is like, I know this to be true from my personal experience and the experience of others from my background, but I think that there will be people who don't understand it and don't relate to it and get frustrated, because they're like, well, I would have just like gone ahead and done that. I would never have cared that much about a family member or anything like that. Like they're just family or something like that, because they don't necessarily relate to the idea of a very, very close family bond. And I think that's something I'm still going to have to figure out how to navigate. There are lots of stories I'd like to tell that I haven't told yet. But maybe someday, who knows? Maybe I'll figure it out down the road.
Right, yeah. How about you, Johnny?
Yeah, I think that like my first challenge was just figuring out how to write romance and like what being in love feels like. It was such an experience for me as just someone who like lands somewhere on the aromantic spectrum of like writing these two boys that were like crushing on each other, but it was like, okay, does this sound like actually right? Like, is this like, am I doing this correctly? Was like a lot of my thought, and like, oh, this probably sounds so fake, or like, this is they're gonna be able to tell that I have no idea what I'm doing here. So like, it was just a lot of like figuring out how to really incorporate like voice in a way that made falling in love feel natural for someone that like doesn't often feel naturally falling in love in life. And so like, that was just like something that I had to sort of like navigate myself into and like slowly kind of feel comfortable writing about, and just like being able to do it in a way that like I was confident in. And it also made it even more difficult with my first book because they were also like in a long distance relationship that like was heavily through like social media and like FaceTimes. And so that just kind of like added another layer of like, okay, I need them to like fully look like they're falling in love, but like they also can't even hold hands yet or like be in the same state. Like, what does that look like? How do I do that? But I think in that way, it's allowed me to then write, you know, my second, third, fourth book in a way that like I've been able to get a grasp on what it looks like to be able to differentiate experiences. Because like in 1500 Miles from the Sun, like again, we're fully 2/3 of the way through the book before Jules and Matt get to even hold hands for the first time. But they've also had like nearly 6 months of building a relationship that then means has prioritized communication and validation, and they've sent each other gifts as ways to feel close to one another. And so like there, I was able to like really stress like these things are important to them. But in Andre and Santi were here, they fully could touch from the get-go, and like that sort of close proximity and small touches became their foundation, while conversely, like Santi had to like keep a lot of truths and harsh realities inside until he wasn't able to anymore. So like there was just I was able to like really just differentiate, and I really did feel like, wow, it's so much easier to write romance when they can like fully like touch, like they can just touch fingers like from the get-go. That's so much better than like being online. Why didn't I do this from the start? But then even in like Canto Contigo, I like tried to purposefully go for something tropey, where in my first two books, I didn't even really know what tropes were when I first got started writing. And so like trying to go like purposefully tropey with the romance and doing a rivals to lovers thing was like a new sort of hard for me of like usually I'm writing two characters who like each other immediately, and it's just chapters of pining until they kiss. But this one, it's like they meet each other And there's some pining, but also like they hate each other for valid reasons. And like having to work through that and get to a point where they can kiss and make it feel meaningful and like their characters have navigated their own personal issues in a way that's growth and is believable to readers. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like this is actually really hard. I just kind of wanted a vibe. And I don't know if like maybe even like Owl, having written like a couple of different tropes, you've like seen which tropes are kind of easier to write or not. But I was like, I don't ever want to do rivals to lovers again. And if I don't have to, I would much rather stick to friends to lovers. But yeah, I think like for me, ultimately though, like I see my challenges being overcome and just considering what love ultimately looks like for these two people. And how do I then get to sort of just like breadcrumb the pieces of that until they finally get to their happily ever after or happily for now?
That's so funny you say that, because I would always pick rivals to lovers over friends to lovers now
Was
that
just
I've done
so
both.
hard to write.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's like with friends to lovers, I find it so hard because it's like, what changed? What changed between you two? Why'd you wait all that time? But the hardest is like when they just straight up don't know each other to me, and then they meet, because I'm like, what could possibly possess you to want to, like, other than like being like, this person's hot, what can possibly you have left to learn everything about them and stuff like that? So now that I've done all three, I'm like, no, rivals to lovers for sure, because then y'all can just argue until eventually you like each
Was
other.
fun to write, which definitely was fun to write.
No, you guys need to write a lovers to rivals. See how like I'm making
Oh.
the opposite way, like
You
bad ending.
know, my friend Emery Lee and I, we have joked about writing a rivals to just even worse rivals story, where they try to like inhabit some sort of romantic space for whatever reason, and then just end up at the end realizing like, actually, no, this isn't gonna work.
I
Like,
would
we
eat that
gotta
up.
go
Yeah. It would be like love story. Meh. I
back.
meh.
The
Maybe
real love
not.
story is the way we hated each other all along. Exactly.
Oh no. So let's talk about like what I mentioned before, that I've had some pushback as a picture book writer trying to write love stories, saying, nah, it's not for little kids. What do you guys think? Do you think that there is a too young age for a love story? And do you think that sort of varies across cultures? L?
I mean, I don't think there's too young, as someone who was in like the second grade with crushes and like playing house and whatnot. So I personally don't think so. I think it all depends on like the author's intent, I think. There's a big conversation in YA about like what is appropriate for YA, what is not. And it's like, as long as you remember and you as the author are intending for this to be read by its intended audience, whether that be children or that be teenagers, it's okay. Like, we're the human experience is varied, and I think that it's okay to write about romance for, middle grade, for even younger than that, because it's a real thing that children experience. Like, how many little fake weddings do you see in pre-K? Like, what? Like, that is such a common thing, and it's okay so long as it's being written for children and is therefore, being made appropriate for children. I don't see why it should be an issue. But that's just
But do
me.
you think that like it's like more acceptable, let's say, in the like the Latinx diaspora or
Yeah.
Hispanic community
I think it's
than
tough.
maybe what more of
Yeah.
an Anglo bent? Because that's sort of the
Yeah.
feeling I have. I don't know if I'm correct in that, but
I
I feel like
don't
it's
know.
perfectly acceptable, like in my cultural background in Argentina stuff, for like there's so many like little songs and kids where kids are falling in love, or a turtle is in love with another turtle, or a mouse in love with the moon, which was my story.
Oh.
And sort of in trying to sell a story like that in the US, I've heard pushback like, oh no, not for little kid, like a love story, they can't relate to that. And I'm like, really? Really?
See, I think they can relate, but this is also coming from someone who was not allowed to date until they were 16. So I was like, I was definitely one of those kids who was like not allowed, like, I had like the stricter Latina background, like not allowed to date, not allowed to do certain things and whatnot. So I could see it being stricter in that, if from my perspective in that sense, but like we can always relate at the end of the day. Like the kids can always relate to the idea of love. Like, you know, they see their parents and they're like, "You're in love, aren't you, Shirley?" Like maybe not always, but
Or
you
maybe
know,
not.
or
Yes.
maybe not. But it's
What
in
is
media too. Like the movies that we see, like look at all like the different Disney movies that feature like a romance storyline. Like,
Yeah.
does anyone think that Frozen is inappropriate for kids? It has a romance storyline like it in it, and that's not considered inappropriate because it's made for kids. It's okay.
Yeah. What do you think, Johnny? Have you like thought about these issues, or is it just me? I don't know.
I think like everything I had thought of like is just going to be reiterated from what Elle said. Like, one, fully Disney princess movies exist. Like, I mean, I grew up watching like Hercules having a crush on Megara and Helga having a crush on like Arnold and Hey Arnold. Like, you know, these are all things that like I don't know. Like, it really does, as Elle said, just goes back to intention and who that specific love story is for. You know, I mean, I 100% would not recommend any of my YA books to even a fourth or a fifth grader, because like, not because they wouldn't understand or even like be able to relate, but because that's just not who I wrote it for. And I think that like, conversely, that there are definitely stories and books to be told that they can both understand and know it is written for them. And I think there's just maybe like, if it is any sort of like linguistic experience or anything like that, I think it's just a fault of people not being able to connect linguistically what love is. And that like, love can just be a feeling of comfort. It can be a feeling of security, of protection, of happiness and joy. Like, all of these things that I think we come into this world and very quickly realize like what that means, what joy and happiness means, what it is to feel protected, what it is to feel all of these things that are not even and degree away from love. And so like, I really do think that like, if it is a belief that like a child is too young for love, like I'm wondering like where they think, why they're too young to experience joy, why do they think they're too young to experience comfort? Because all of these things just align themselves to what love is. And so yeah, like I think that it's really just a misunderstanding and sort of a maybe insecurity, but also just a lacking of really getting to what love is in a way that like, I don't know, I don't know. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, I
Their
think it's
inability
just
to
not
really
giving
just
enough
think about
credit
it
to
complexly
like
and
kids.
broadly. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. But let's like dive a little bit deeper into the fields in terms of your own romantic and friendship stories. And can you tell me a scene from one of your own books that sort of is impactful to you or makes your heart flutter a little bit? Do you have one that comes to the top of your mind, Johnny?
Yeah, so I had thought of one for both like platonic and like romantic love. Like the platonic one in 1500 Miles from the Sun, there's specifically a scene with Jules, the main character, and one of his friends named Rolly. And Rolly sort of just like has this moment of honesty with Jules, who had recently come out as gay and was like kind of like coming into himself as this like young gay person and really becoming comfortable with who he was. And you know, Rolly was honest about the fact that like, when you first came out, I was actually struggling and kind of caught off guard, and like, you know, having to deal with my own sort of issues of being uncomfortable around a queer person, and you know, having to grow out of that, and what like maybe I have learned being a part of, you know, a community that can be very machismo, and like allowing myself to grow out of that because I care about you more than I care about any sort of gender or sexuality ideals that I have been taught. You matter more to me than that. And I thought it was just a really important conversation to have, because I think that, you know, growth is something that happens. And I think that like, you know, allowing yourself to be honest with your friends about the fact that like, here's where I struggled, but like, here's me telling you that you matter more to me than anything silly like that. And how I've been able to grow and kind of embrace the fact that, like, I would rather have you in my life than me leave your life because I can't be a part of this one specific thing about you. I really thought that was just a really big moment of like growth. I thought that it was really impactful for like, young queer Latinos to see who grow up in spaces where maybe like they're being told that like this is just like incompatible with like you with your own sort of circle of friends. And just being able to be like upfront with your friends, I think is just so important. That respectability and that sort of allowing yourself to show where you kind of messed up, but where you are working on yourself and trying to be better. So I really liked writing that scene. And then from romantic love, I thought of Ander and Santi were here. There's this scene where Ander is painting this like wall of cacti, and Santi like joins them for a day of just like finishing the wall. And so like Santi gets to actually see like Ander like doing their mural thing and like painting and is even like offering to help. And it's just really cutesy and like the pining and stuff. But like afterwards, they're like looking at the mural, and Ander is being honest about the fact that like just being a brown person and a queer person in a space that is very much like validated by older white people when it comes to like art or really any kind of creative spaces, they've always sort of been like on the fence about like, I love doing art like this, but I've also felt like doing it puts me in a box, and this box is conforming to what like the general white scope of artists want me to be in, and it kind of devalues it in their heart. But Santi is saying like, no, like I see that and I see home, I see heart, I see everything that like I love and am missing, and you're giving it to me and to your community, and that's something that's just so beautiful, and it's something that only you can do. And so like them being it like Ander letting Santi in, and Santi like just fully being able to validate Ander's experience and their want to be the creative that they want to be, I thought just like really kind of like set in place, like, oh yeah, like they're gonna be in it for the long run. This is where we kind of just go full throttle for here from here. Like, you can't have this conversation about home and heart and art and not make out in the next like 20 pages. So I really loved writing that scene.
Sounds amazing. What about you, Elle? Do you have a scene that you can share with us?
Yeah, so I have one for Caught in a Bad Fomance and then one for 10 Things. My ultimate favorite romantic scene in Fomance is a spoiler, so I won't say that one, but a very close second, probably my favorite scene to actually write in the book is their main characters are have been like rivals their entire lives. They've known each other since they were like 5 years old. They really, really don't like each other. And then when they're forced to fake date each other, they really, really don't like each other because they're bringing out the worst in each other. But as they get to know each other, they're slowly starting to learn, like, oh, you know, you're not so bad. We actually do have a lot of things in common, even though you're annoying. And there's this turning point where they've finally really opened up to one another, and you start to see, like, oh, this person who acts like he's so perfect is not so perfect. And I can actually really understand the issues that he's going through, and I can really relate to that in my own life. And they finally start to become vulnerable with one another, and they both kind of share one of their respective things that they're dealing with. And they go and hang out after like a very stressful day where they're like at each other's throats, but get through it together. And they have this conversation where the love interest basically says that the main character, Devin, is his broccoli, in that he is something that he hated as a kid, but now that he is trying it again when he is older, he's realizing it's not so bad after all. And I thought that was just so cute because it was it's like the turning point in the classic rivals or enemies to lovers romance, that moment where you realize, oh, actually, you're not so bad. Then it's all a downward slope from there into romance, because now you cross the hurdle of I don't dislike you anymore. And I thought that was just like such a fun metaphor to play with. And I was very proud of, to me, it felt very teenage appropriate at the time. I was like, I think this is a metaphor that a hip little teenager would make. So I was proud of that at the time. And I'm still proud of it. I really like that scene a lot because I think it marks the turning point in their relationship where they're finally admitting to themselves out loud that they don't hate each other anymore. And in 10 things, this is a good one for this specific prompt because it is, even though the main characters are, going to eventually be in a romantic relationship, they are best friends. And at this point, this is more of a platonic moment between them where, without getting too into spoilers, it's later on in the book, but things have happened and they are not going well. So they are kind of on the outs at the moment. They have betrayal has happened. They are really not friends anymore at this point, or rather, it's up in the air whether they're even going to be friends anymore. Emotions are running high. It's been made clear that there are romantic feelings on one side or the other, unclear if it's unrequited or not. And the main character finds out that the love interest character, her best friend Joaquin, is essentially going to be alone at like the biggest moment of his high school career. He has this huge baseball game. And because of various things that happen, with no spoilers, he's going to be alone. No one from like his corner is going to be there. And she doesn't know if she should even be there because they're kind of on the outs with one another. And she, at that point, is angry with him. He's angry with her. But she remembers that at the end of the day, no matter what happens, that they're best friends and that they always want the best for one another and that they've always gone above and beyond for each other, no matter what. And she does something for him to ensure that he is not alone on his big day, even though she knows that, he doesn't really want to see her. She might necessarily want to see him right now. But what's more important is their friendship at the end of the day. And I think that that's also emblematic of something that I think is important for me in romance, which is that there are two sides to the romance, even if it's not dual POV. I think that it's important that there's always a reason the love interest should love the main character back. And I think that this is one of those moments where you can see why someone like Joaquin would fall in love with this character. And there's a moment like that in Fomance as well, where the main character is really putting themselves out there for the sake of the other character, because the other character, the love interest, deserves to be shown love as well and deserves their own love story that we're not necessarily seeing on the page. So I think it's emblematic of friendship, of romance, and also seeing why he would, want to be in a relationship with her and kiss her and sweep her off her feet by the end of the book.
God, you guys are getting me so inspired to read your books. I have to read them and find out all these things that you're not giving away. So let's talk about if, and imagine this is a post-it note, okay? If you could slide a note under the door of one of your characters about love or friendship, so just a little note, what would you say? Do you have an idea of a character and what you could say to them? How about you, Johnny?
I think like it would probably be for Jules, my first ever main character. I mean, this might be a spoiler alert, but the book came out 2.5 years ago, so catch up. But at the end of his story, he's heading off to Los Angeles for college, and I think like I would tell him that it's okay if like as months and years start passing by, you lose touch with the people who knew you best in high school. That like it doesn't make any of those good times less good. It doesn't devalue how important they were for you, and making space in your heart for new people doesn't chip away at like whatever place those people once inhabited or inhabited. So yeah, like go make new friends, make new memories, and let your heart grow and allow for more people in, and you're gonna do great.
Yeah, I think we could all use that advice, not only your main characters, but all of us. How about you, Elle? What would your note say?
Yeah, I'm gonna say I would like that note too. I would have appreciated that note when I was a teenager. I think I'll do one for each very quickly. That for Fomance, I think I would tell the main character, this is more friendship related, I would tell him why his twin sister, is upset with him. Because a lot of the book is about, how you adjust to being away from college, being away at college for the first time, and the impact that that has on the people in your life. And it really has a huge impact on his twin sister because they're used to being together constantly and suddenly they're not. And the circumstances of them respectively going off to college is very jarring for both of them, especially for her. And a lot of the book is them kind of dancing around this topic. So that's not a spoiler. It's pretty clear to everyone except him. So I think I would just make it a little clearer to him that he should prioritize his relationship with his sister because he has maybe not been the best brother and communicator at the moment, and that they should just talk about their feelings instead of just being passive aggressive all the time, even though I'm one to talk because that's what I do. But in 10 things, obviously it's a friends to lovers romance, so I'd slide post-it notes to both of the characters and just say, you both like each other. That's it. Like, just, you both like each other.
Well, that would be the end of the book.
Yep,
just end of the book. Whole book then.
An anonymous post-it note that just says, Ivelisse likes you, Joaquin likes you, go ahead. Like, that would have, the book would have ended on page one.
So maybe don't slip book. That post-it note under
the... I feel like that could make for just a really cute book, though, and just, like,
honestly,
all up in the hadas that come after, like,
yes,
someone randomly, anonymously just slips you a note like that, like...
And then it, like, just ruins your day, or, like, oh,
yeah,
my
I wouldn't
God.
Know how, I would not know how to act,
Oh,
like...
my God, wait a minute. Well, now when you see in 2 years a rom-com coming out from someone here with that exact premise.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if they want to spend the 90,000 words or whatever, 75,000 words writing
Please.
It, by all means, like, take it.
There you go. That's for you, Aisha. You got your, okay. That's your romance.
Yeah, that's a picture book because you only need a couple words.
Look, and, I mean, in post-it notes. It could all be through post-it notes.
There you go.
Yeah.
It tells
exactly.
Itself.
Okay, so last question of the podcast. This is a fun one, but you might not think it's fun. So picture this, prom night with one of your characters. Who's your dream dance partner and how do you think the night would play out? Is there any unexpected plot twists on the dance floor, Johnny?
I think of two. I think of from 1500 miles of the from the sun. One of Jules's friends, named Lou. She's like the social queen of the school and is just so wild and like triple Sagittarius, messy, but like is gonna have fun and you're gonna have fun if she's around. So I think that would be really enjoyable. But also I could fully picture like Santi from Andre and Santi were here. Just like he's a great dancer, one, but also like. He's a Taurus, so he's also going to just and but like as it gets like later, he's going to be the one to really prioritize like, okay, whenever we go out to eat afterwards, like what are we having? Tortas, quesadillas, Whataburger, like where are we going after this? And I think that's such an important conversation and someone needs to handle that. And I could trust him to like make sure that we're going to go to a really good spot and like just decompress over some food after this dance.
Wait, that is, you're explaining my husband to me, Johnny. I didn't know that was a Taurus thing. Now I understand
what's like
happening with the food.
Comfort. Yeah, they need their, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you for that. How about you, Elle? What are you, prom night with one of your characters?
Oh, my prom experience was so unusual. So I find the concept of any like normal prom fascinating. I think in my limo, I would have Devin, the main character of Fomance's twin sister, Maya, there because she's like very into fashion. She designs her own wigs and she's really good at makeup and stuff. So she could like make me look good for the night. But if I were actually at the dance, I'd probably want to like party or be with Joaquin, who is the love interest in 10 Things I Hate About Prom, which actually has a prom, is he is like the most popular guy in school. So obviously you want to go hang out with him. And he's actually nice, as Evely says multiple times. He's actually nice and he doesn't smell like a wet sock. So he's like, you know, a dreamboat.
Well,
I would want to hang out with him, but that would cause drama because obviously his best friend is secretly in love with him and is sabotaging his promposals left and right. So she would not be happy with me, but she can suck it. She didn't read my post-it notes. So if she had read my post-it note,
someone has to be the drama.
Exactly. And it's me. I'm going to be there to be the drama. There was no drama at my prom. I'm going to go to this prom to be the drama.
Well, I love the way both of you could not limit it to one of your characters. You had to bring at least two of your characters to prom with you. So that's about love, I guess. So I want to thank you both so much for being with us on this February Love, Friendship, and All the Feels podcast. And if you would like to learn more about Las Musas or our books, please visit our website at lasmusasbooks.com. Or find us on social media at Las Musas Books. And be sure to check out our bookshop page where each purchase of one of our books goes towards supporting independent bookstores. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also sign up for the Las Musas newsletter to have podcast updates as well as other Musa news such as release dates, teasers, spotlights, and more delivered straight to your inbox. Thank you so much, Johnny and Elle, for all your wonderful, lovely insights in this love podcast. And thanks for listening.